Welcome to another Philadelphia Inquirer Theater podcast. I'm Howie Shapiro at the Inquirer Theater desk. The Philadelphia Theater Company finally has a home to call its own. For a quarter century, the company has been producing professional theater on the Delancey Street stage of plays and players, which it rented over the years from the community theater organization that owns it. For the past decade, Artistic Director Sarah Goronczyk and the Philadelphia Theater Company board have been moving toward owning a theater. Now it's official. The Suzanne Roberts Theater on Broad Street between Lombard and Pine is open with Philadelphia Theater Company's first show of the season called Being Alive, a musical pastiche of Stephen Sondheim's songs and William Shakespeare's words. The show runs through December 2nd, and the Suzanne Roberts Theater, the Philadelphia Theater Company's new home, runs for good. Richard Maiman, a senior associate at the Philadelphia architecture firm Kieran Timberlake, designed the theater, and we talked in a conference room at Kieran Timberlake's sunlit offices on 20th Street near Callow Hill. I asked him how long it took to get the theater from concept to opening night.
We began this actual project in the spring of 2004, so it took 3.5 years for the project. But we were working with Philadelphia Theater Company for about 10 years as they were seeking to find a new venue that would be their own. Plays and Players is a theater that is owned by a community group that Philadelphia Theater Company rented over the years, didn't have full control. And while it has a wonderful, charming auditorium that theatergoers have loved, the building suffers from numerous other problems. First of all, it's completely inaccessible. Second of all, it's rather uncomfortable.
You mean it's inaccessible
for the disabled?
And people with disabilities.
Yeah, I mean, even people who have trouble just getting across steps and all that, let alone wheelchairs.
It also has a heating system that is very loud.
It has a loud ventilation system. It has bathrooms in the basement that are minimally functional. It has a party space on the third floor with no elevator. It has virtually no real support for theater, dressing rooms, all of that kind of
space.
The backstage
stuff
is very poor. There's no wing space. The theater stage has very little depth. It doesn't have the full height of a fly gallery for flying scenery.
Yeah, for those of us who actually have sat in the new theater, in the Suzanne Roberts, you know, and then got to go on stage, it's what you don't see necessarily from sitting in the new theater is how much space there is backstage.
And that was a absolutely goal number one, was to provide the optimum stage for the theater. And when we were looking at sites across the city, as I was mentioning, over that 10-year period, we looked at potential developments with developers. Every parking garage that was going up, I think we looked at renovating some of the old movie theaters on Chestnut Street, former restaurants, etc. None of them quite had the dimensions that would make the optimum theater, and that was what was important. We wanted to have the optimum theater for Philadelphia Theater Company, both the stage and the seating and lobby spaces for the audience.
So you had to do that from the ground up?
In the end, the ground up was the best way to do it. The city offered this site broad between Pine and Lombard through PIDC. It was an Exxon station, some people will remember.
When you say PIDC?
Philadelphia Industrial Development Corporation. And it was put out to bid as a project that would include residential with a live performance venue of a cultural type. And actually, Philadelphia Theater Company had its name mentioned in the RFP as a group that was interested in the site. So two of the three developers included PTC. Carl Dranoff was successful, as we know.
Right. Now, when you did you ever think you'd be doing another proscenium stage theater?
From the beginning, knowing Philadelphia Theater Company, we knew it, because that was Sarah Goronczyk's goal. It was to build a new proscenium. Generally, they're not built very much today. We've done black boxes. We've worked on end stages at colleges. We've worked on flexible theaters. But a new proscenium theater is unique, and you're really apt to ask that question.
And the Arden, the downstairs stage at the Arden, the Haas, which your firm also did, was, I don't think, is a proscenium.
No, it's a completely flexible black box theater of about 375 seats. So it's about the same seating capacity, but the opposite extreme of theater architecture, and really the theater artists' decisions about production. It's the opposite.
I think the same is true upstairs at the Arden.
That's
true.
Which both theaters are flexible.
Slovic, David Slovic did.
Correct.
And they wanted it that way, but
they wanted flexibility and the sense of the audience and the stage being one,
yeah.
And that the audience is backstage, the stage is, the performers are in the audience, and that mix is really what they're all about. On the other hand, Sarah Goranczyk speaks of enjoying the tension that the proscenium opening gives you, that you're always playing against that frame, and the audience is in its world, the actors are in their world, but that frame, that the tension of that rectangle and what it means is something that she finds actually liberating, not limiting.
It's interesting.
An opposite theater point of view.
It's one of those things that makes one company different from another.
Absolutely.
You know, down the street from each other.
Right.
A few blocks. What are some of the special things, Richard, that you have to think of when you're designing a theater that you don't necessarily ever think of when you're designing another kind of building?
That's a good question, because theaters are really very specific and incidentally very expensive spaces because of all the systems that are supported there. First is that sight lines of the audience. You're designing a space where a group of people, whether it's 370 seats as at Philadelphia Theater Company, Suzanne Roberts Theater, less or more at other theaters, where you want to maximize the view from every person. And in doing so, keep the space as intimate as possible. Keep everyone as close to the stage as possible. So we work with a theater consultant.
That's true in any theater, right?
Any theater.
Okay.
You have to have excellent sight lines and keep everyone as physically close as possible. It's much easier to design it with lots more room, but then people start to get further away, the stage seems smaller, and the acoustical ambience is much diminished. So, and that leads me to the second item, which is understanding the acoustics of the kind of performances done on the stage. Philadelphia Theater Company specializes in new American plays and musicals, largely drama, but occasionally musicals, as right now with Being Alive. And given a house of 370 seats and the program of doing drama, we wanted to design a space that had natural acoustics, that if the decision was made not to mic a performance, that actors could be on stage and be heard in the last row of the mezzanine. Mm-hmm. And that is an important goal. Now, at the development of Broad between Pine and Lombard, we also have the issues of a parking garage from Symphony House right above our lobby and above our auditorium. So we had to acoustically isolate from that so you don't hear cars turning around.
Yeah.
Likewise, and more importantly, the subway.
You've got the Broad Street subway,
the Broad Street
right
subway
underneath.
And you know, a lot of theatergoers are familiar with, in New York, feeling the vibration of the 8th Avenue subway every so often. We felt, and the board agreed, that in a brand new building, you should limit that as much as possible. People are more forgiving in old buildings.
Yeah.
And at Broad and Lombard, we have double the amount of vibration as at Broad and Spruce because of a track interchange. This was studied by our acoustical consultant and his vibration sub-consultant. You're asking about other complexities of designing.
Yeah, theater. Yeah.
It's all these specialists who are part of it. So we actually have a separate structure for the auditorium and the stage, independent of everything around them, independent of the tower of Symphony House, independent of the garage, independent of our own lobby, separated by a 2-inch gap all the way around, and sitting on rubber isolation pads before they meet the concrete foundations, such that those two structures, the auditorium where the audience is sitting and the stage house, are isolated from everything around them, and therefore you do not hear or feel the Broad Street subway.
Oh, interesting. You talk about the track interchange right underneath the building?
Adjacent to the building.
Adjacent
to the building at Broad and Lombard. Not underneath, but it's adjacent, and there's enough vibration in the ground that it would have been felt in the theater. Mm. So that is, vibration isolation or acoustical isolation is one, but also with it is what we call architectural acoustics. That's the design of the space to enhance the natural voice. I mentioned it's important to keep the seats close to the actors, but you have to design the room to enhance the voice, limit echoes, assure that it's clear. So that led to the combination of both aesthetics and acoustics gearing us toward the curving panels on the walls of the
theater. Well, what you did was you used a material that nobody's used in a theater before, right?
I don't think it's been used very much in theaters. Oh. I never say 100% in architecture.
Right, right, right.
The minute you finish talking, there's always another example.
Yeah, somebody pops up and says, yeah, what about my place? But it's gypsum, right?
It's gypsum.
Not
it's
just
glass gypsum. Reinforced gypsum. Mm-hmm. So it's very strong. It's plaster-like if you touch it. It has glass fibers in it. That allows it to be fabricated off-site. We custom-designed the curves. There's kind of the two curve and three curve models of the panels on the wall, and they're designed visually to give the walls shade and shadow and depth, like you would find in a traditional theater with the garlands and cherubs and all of that.
Yeah.
But done in a contemporary way, and then by curving or limiting the flat walls that would create echoes in the space. So it's meant to diffuse the sound while contributing to the visual richness of the room.
Plays and Players is, as you said, a charming space, and it's low tech. You know, you're in it, and you know it's old, and you know that if you know anything about theater, you're looking on stage, and you know people are dealing with doing stuff the way it used to be done because of the space. But you moved into a space where you know that for 25 years that company performed there. People really were used to it. So you had to...
There was a lot of trepidation among longtime theatergoers for Philadelphia Theater Company and some board members about leaving that theater because of those wonderful qualities.
So what did you have to do? That actually made you do a few things in the theater.
That was a challenge. Certainly number one was the proscenium, and coming with the proscenium was the notion of a main floor, an orchestra level, and a mezzanine. That type, you know, that everyone loves those old Broadway theaters on 44th Street or the Forest Theater,
oh, yeah.
A little underutilized here, that was the type that came with it. But what we had to do was try to achieve the intimacy that Plays and Players has. And that's not just dimensional, but it's also the feel of the space. So in terms of dimensions, what's very important is we have 370 seats. Plays and Players is 320, so we have a gain of 50.
Mm-hmm.
And of the 320, I don't think all of them are actually usable.
No, I know they're not.
As you've been in some of them. 370 seats. We have contemporary codes that we're meeting in terms of fire safety. So there's more dimension for egress. There's also more dimension for legs. The seats are wider. However, the last row of the balcony is only 5 feet further from the stage than the last row at Plays and Players. So I'd like to say it's designed in a smarter way. It's more intelligent. And that's because of all the experience of our firm and our theater consultant and building a new construction where we didn't have the narrow constraint. Plays and Players is basically three townhouses wide. Mm-hmm. And that's the constraint. So it's squeezed into that site. Now, in terms of the character, that's more elusive. And that led us to the curving panels on the walls, that sense of shade and shadow and deep colors that you have in a traditional theater.
Yeah.
The design of the proscenium is another key feature where it was important to Sarah and others at the theater company that we didn't upstage what was happening with the play, mm-hmm. with a proscenium that was too bold. Yet it had to have some character of its own. So we came up with this idea of a curving plane. It's a shell, if you will. It's curved in plan and section, and covered it with leather tiles that have a kind of handmade quality. They're placed in a herringbone pattern, a deep wine red in a herringbone pattern, that to those longtime theatergoers, to Plays and Players, may make a connection to the arts and crafts detailing at Plays and Players.
Right.
It's a little
right.
bit of that's literal. There's a touch of gold leaf at the perimeter of the proscenium opening, which again ties it back to that. But we would like to think, and I think everyone agrees, that the theater feels very contemporary at the same time.
Tell me about the lobby. The lobby is special because you really, you took some special care with it, I know, because you wanted to be seen from the street, from Broad Street, and I suppose what you wanted was the buzz.
definitely did. Being hidden away on Delancey in the Plays and Players Theater has been very nice. It's a very charming block. It's very residential, almost like a found location.
Yeah.
But it was important for Philadelphia Theater Company in its next incarnation to be a major player in the city. They've been
really
a major
visible.
Player. They've been a major player in terms of the work they've done, but rather invisible on the cityscape. So in coming to this project, and one of the great advantages of working early with the Dranoff organization and their architects, Barry Lewis Thrower, was establishing where the theater would actually fit into the project and making it work early on. And it afforded us this tremendous street front on Broad Street, 160 feet. From traveling around the country looking at theaters and doing our research for this project, there's no other theater that's a regional theater of this scale that has that kind of frontage on a major American street.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
On a new building. It's beautiful.
Richard Maiman from Kieran Timberlake Architects designed the new Suzanne Roberts Theater on Broad Street as the home of the Philadelphia Theater Company. The musical Being Alive opens the theater and runs through December 2nd. You can find more information by using the link on our webpage or by visiting the Philadelphia Theater Company website. We hope you'll join us again in our ongoing series of Enquirer Theater podcasts. This is Howie Shapiro from the theater desk of the Enquirer.